Hey, I'm Daniel Colburn.
And I'm Caleb Porzio.
Welcome to 20% Time, where two coworkers discuss one programming topic every Friday for less than 20 minutes.
Yep, that would be crazy.
Anyway.
That's crazy. Anyway.
Let's talk about keyboard shortcuts real quick.
Okay.
I don't know what any of the symbols mean.
I don't know them either. And I look down at my keyboard and I go, this is hilarious because the only one, and maybe this is the reason I know it, but the only keyboard symbol I know, or like, I guess we should use a better word, alt key symbol or modifier key symbol.
Modifier key
symbol. On the Mac is the little squiggly command symbol. And that's right. The only one that it shows. The other one is
upward
alt.
Upward caret is control.
See, to me, I'm like, oh, that's shift, like it's up, you know?
Right. And then there's the one that's like a squiggly.
The alternative path, the like git flow.
Yeah, the git flow looking one.
The branch.
I assume that's alt, but that could also be shift.
Maybe like 2 months ago, I wouldn't know, but I'm like 90% sure that it's alt because, you know, like every so often when I find myself in the Mac preferences and the keyboard section and mapping something, and it shows you the key value pair of like symbol to modifier key. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it, I was like, okay, remember it this time, like burn this into your brain. Mm-hmm. And I think like another part of the confusion is when you're in Sublime or something and you, or if you look at something online, like docs that say this keyboard shortcut works, it's like a crapshoot in Sublime. If the keyboard shortcut
works or not,
you know,
right.
Because of all that overwriting and all that stuff. So right. I try it and I'm like, and then I question my knowledge of the symbols and it's a mess.
Right. We might just know them.
We might just know them.
But we just don't believe we know them.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. But that I think after this conversation, we'll know them. The caret is control. The branch thing is alt.
Okay. Let's think about it this way. Here's a mnemonic for you. What that looks like to me is a little symbol demonstrating that there are two options.
Right.
You have an up option and a down option.
The alt, you're saying.
Right? Yeah, but in Mac world, we call alt option. It's the option key.
Yeah, see, like my keyboard says alt next to option, so
yeah.
I guess I never say option.
Yeah.
I guess option's not.
I say
language.
Alt too. Yeah, I mean, but
yeah, option and alt.
Like,
they both kind of match that symbol. Control, just there's no mapping. It's just caret, which is confusing as shift. So,
but that I feel like that ends up in terminal sometimes. So I know about that. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. This week in pull requests, shall we?
Yes, were there?
There were a few. So there was one by yours truly. Pretty sweet helper function we talked about last week on the call. So the catch up, I had this vision in the woods of a string helper function called string tail that would add, it would replace that R trim concatenation pattern when you want to ensure there's a suffix on a string, usually used in like a path context with like URLs and stuff. I started talking with, I think like Adam messaged me or something and had some suggestions and was like, I don't like string tail, but I like ensure, and me and Taylor use ensure a lot. We talked it over, and then Matt and you came in a Slack message group, whatever thing, saying essentially what Adam and I were saying is that string prefix
and suffix on the show.
Right, you did. Okay, so anyway.
And then Matt heard it on the show and said, I agree.
Yep, okay. So all four people are rooting for string prefix and string suffix. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, this is great. I got, you know, all this backing. This is going to get PR'd. It has to. Mm-hmm. So I open up my framework repository, and I start to write a test in the string helpers, you know, test file, whatever. And I'm going to alphabetize the test, and I see right after is string finish. And I'm like, what is string finish? String finish is exactly what we were trying to do this entire time, and it exists in Laravel for a long time. I don't know how long. Did you know this existed?
I did. So
you did?
I knew this existed. Let me tell you how I knew this existed. I want to say on Saturday or Sunday after we released our popular internet podcast, I received a tweet from a person on the internet whose name escapes me, who said, and it was directed, it was added at you and me, and it said, string finish exists. And I was like, well, I'm sure Caleb saw that and will properly incorporate that into his pull request plans. And I think I hearted it and I moved on with my day.
So,
and then you messaged me like 3 or 4 days later and said, Daniel, string finish exists. And I was like, shoot, he didn't see that tweet. Okay.
I've been kind of lax on the Twitter thing. I found that string finish and I messaged Adam string finish, just like one word, string finish. And his response was like, he's like, I don't like that. Like, I thought about that and I don't like it. And then he realized that it exists.
Yeah.
So anyway, it exists and that's funny. So then naturally, like any good string helper function, there's an equally great opposite string helper function to pull request. String start, right? Too easy. I pull requested it and it went through like a charm. So you now have string start
string
and string
helper
finish.
Offering.
And that, yes. Yeah, Taylor accepts me for all my string helper offerings.
Yeah.
Great.
You're the string guy.
I'm the string guy. You know, that's what I want to be known as when people, you know, yeah.
Maybe you should be a Perl developer. They're very good with strings over there.
Yeah, see, that's like, because PHP is terrible with strings.
Perl is great with them.
Yeah, are the strings objects in Perl?
I don't know. All I know is that anybody who I have ever heard explain why Perl is good has gone to strings.
Yeah. I don't know. That sounds great. Your little two-string thing in JavaScript, I didn't know that JavaScript objects could have two-string and JavaScript just knows how to respond to that. Is that right? Am I reading that right?
Yep.
That's real.
So there is a default two-string. There's like a default like object prototype two-string, which
That's
exists.
Sick.
Which by default returns open square bracket, capital object, comma, lowercase object, comma, close square bracket, which is the least useful two-string that anything has ever had. But if you like have ever console logged an object and gotten object.
Yep.
That's why, is because that's what the two-string method is.
Wow, that's crazy. I just thought that was like DevTools being DevTools.
No, that's the two-string method.
Wow,
so
that's crazy.
So you can overwrite that. So I'm actually working on a thing for Ziggy right now for passing in like URL parameters. And so we had this big discussion in this issue, me and Jesse, I want to say his name is pronounced Lighty, but I don't know. And we were talking about like all the ways that we could do this. We were talking about adding a third object as a parameter to the route function. But then it was like starting to get really out of sync with how the route function in Laravel works. So that was weird. Then we were talking about like, all right, well, should we just like take anything that doesn't match up with a expected URL parameter and then just assume that it's supposed to be like, you know, appended after the URL.
Yeah.
So we thought about all these things, and then I was like, I don't know, like it feels like we're making the route function really messy, and like if we keep adding functionality to the route function, eventually it's going to be like this nasty behemoth and no one's going to understand how to use it, and it's going to be difficult for people to use it in like the basic use case because of all the customization.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, how do we solve these things? And the answer was fluency. And so what I'm doing is I'm creating a router object, because that's what the object is called in Laravel.
Nice.
So I have a router object, and the router object has a URL property. And the toString for the router object is just this.url. So basically, I have a route function that creates a new router. And then I have a bunch of, I can add like prototype functions to that router, including my with params function, which I might rename. I'd love your help naming that better.
Mm-hmm.
But the with params function accepts an object and then mutates this.url. So basically you can just, and then it returns this. So theoretically I've built the possibility for like infinite fluency in this route function, which is cool.
Nice.
So next time someone has like a cool hot feature idea that they want to add as like a route parameter, we can just add it as like a fluent method.
Right. That's great. The config killer, the config object param killer.
Yeah. Fluency. Fluency.
That's great. Nice.
Love it.
Yep. Sweet. Yep. That two string thing is cool.
It is cool.
Yeah. So how's Ziggy going?
It's good, man. It's active, dude. The people are submitting the pull requests and the issues. It's crazy.
I'm watching it on GitHub, and it's like every day I just get blown up with these notifications. That's cool.
Dude, it is. I mean, my goal today is to clear the issue board, either by like closing and saying we're not going to do them, or by doing it, or by like deciding how we're going to do it and seeing if someone else will do it. So that's what I have today ahead of me.
Sweet.
Yeah.
In other Laravel news, the PR thing, there's two more quick ones. There's instead of carbon, you know, carbon, in 5.5, there's a carbon wrapper, Illuminate support carbon, which just extends carbon. I'm pretty sure it extends carbon. And that's used throughout Laravel, and hopefully people will use it. And the only difference is it's macroable. So essentially...
Please.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So carbon will be macroable in 5.5. And I think that's new. I recall hearing something, but I mean, the PR is pretty recent, so.
That's sick, though. That's like one of those things where you just always need custom behavior surrounding times and dates.
Totally.
So sounds like a great place to have macroable.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I dig that. Lucas Mitchett, I don't know who pull requested it, but Lucas Mitchett, I'm probably mispronouncing that, but he's the guy who's constantly like submitting giant PRs to change, to like update patterns in Laravel, like like use this throughout Laravel. If there's like five different ways to do something, he like normalizes them all. So anyway, he's been hard at work taking all the carbons and turning them into support carbon. So that's cool. The other one's not a pull request, but there's a conversation going on. I've been following this. I think it's an issue or a PR. I don't even know. On API response. It's the fractal problem. We might have even talked about it here. Like it's the, why doesn't Laravel have something like fractal, you know, for JSON transformations? Like I want my JSON response to be formatted a specific way. So, you know, people turn to fractal, but a lot of people ask the question, like, this is so common. Why doesn't Laravel, you know, help us out here?
Right.
And so anyway, it's just this big complex thing that's there's so many issues out there and pull requests and so much conversation surrounding it, and it kind of died out for a while. But then like today or yesterday, Taylor just came in and kind of revived it and was like, okay, so tell me, he just kind of broke it down. It was like, is this what you guys want? Like, you want a method on a model that says transform to JSON, and just all it does is return an array. He was basically saying, like, you guys realize that what you want is so simple and you could do it yourself so easily, but everybody seems to want it. So
I don't think that's what people want.
Well, yeah, I don't know. And
I think people want a transformer like Fractal has, where they can go in and specify the architecture of that array.
Right. So you would be able to specify the architecture of this array, right? Like, it would be a method on a model that's, let's say it says ready for JSON or something, and then it just returns an array, right? Like that's what it is. That's what a transformer is. You're just you're taking something, you're just returning your own standardized response that can be depended on.
Right. But for example, like, say I have, oh, I don't know. Like, say I have something called JSON data in my database for some reason, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And I want to return it to the front, like to the client as just data because it's all JSON, right?
Right.
And then say I have something called image, and when I return it, I just want to return like starting with // instead of like the HTTP.
Right.
Or whatever. You know, like
any
like modifications I want to do to my data. Right. Or like including or excluding things, or like eager loading things, any of that stuff I can do all in my transformer.
Right.
And then I just have a class. It's a class. And then I can, any place in my app, so I can have multiple transformers. So I can say, like, I could have a skinny post transformer and a fat post transformer, right? Okay. And then, it, like, if I, if I'm on a page where I only need, like, basic post info, like title, ID, whatever, I could use the skinny post transformer. Or, you get what I'm saying?
Yep, totally. Yeah, and that, that matches my understanding, I guess, except what you're saying is you could, you would have multiple transformers for one post.
Yeah, well, you would just, I mean, you could basically pass any piece of data into a transformer, and then as long as it had the fields that are requested by the transformer,
yeah,
you could use it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if what he's saying, the quote from him is, something that would help me in this thread are answer to these questions. What are we trying to solve? At the end of the day, implementations seem to boil down to something like this. And then he posts a little snippet that's function transform post, accepts a post, and then returns an array. He said, every time I start hacking on it a bit, I come back to the core fact that we're just giving you a fancy way to declare a plain PHP function that returns an array. Is that all we're trying to do? And then people sort of continue the conversation. So, and I didn't actually read the rest of the conversation, so I shouldn't even be talking. But
yeah. So, well, the other nice thing that that Fractal does is it allows you to nest. So, like, it allows you to sort of say I have, like, a post transformer and a comment transformer, right? Okay. I can nest my comments in my post.
Oh, nice.
With the comment transformer. So I can use the post transformer, and then if it has comments, it will render all those comments using the comment transformer that it already knows about.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I wonder if this Laravel thing will, like, if it'll check that for the comments model, if it has a transform comments, and then, like, it for you, you know? That'd be cool. So cool. Anyway, I think it'll be cool. I've sort of, like, I try to avoid transformers, and I would avoid them less if it was built into Laravel. So,
And the other main thing is that it gives you, like, a master data serializer, which is useful. So, like, if you want to wrap it in, like, JSON or JSON API sort of formatting,
right? Totally,
you can do all of that.
Yep. Yeah, that's usually my use case, is, like, just wanting that JSON. Mm-hmm. Formatting, and I just end up making a macro or making some sort of popo. Anyway, we'll see.
So you have a topic.
Yeah. State. I want to talk about model states. So there's this, so this kind of came about because this in some way stems from our single table inheritance conversation. And somehow I found myself on Railscasts looking at how Rails does single table inheritance. And then somehow from that page, I found something referencing state machine, which is a Rails package or gem or whatever. And so then I looked into state machine and I thought, oh, I wonder if this exists for Laravel. And it does exist for Laravel. People have tried it and made it for Laravel. But I've never heard of this pattern. And when I dug into it, it was one of those things that I was like, this is brilliant. Like, I've needed this so many times. And I've done horrible things because I didn't have this at my disposal. So I've...
Explain it to me.
Okay, here we go. So state machine. Let's say you have... So the context of what I was doing was... let's say you're working on a marketplace and there's... let's say a product or something, okay? Yep. And you can... When you go to create a product... You can create it and it's in a draft state, right? Because you want to modify it and you don't want it to be public. Then it can be in, like, a published state. Then it could be, let's say there's a time limit on it, like it's an opportunity or something. Then it's in an expired state. And then when you choose to delete it, it's in an archive state, right? So like, there's all those different states. And I guess the simplest UI element that would reflect this is when you're, you know, a user and you're in the edit form of this, you would see, like, the state in the top right. It would say, like, draft or public, you know, like,
right,
like
that. And thing, it would end up in different, like, lists in your UI.
Yeah, it would end up in different lists, all these things. It would display a little differently. Public, you know, like, publicly, you wouldn't be able to view something that's in draft, only in published, and you wouldn't be able to view archived. And people need to get emailed when the states change from drafted to published and all that type of stuff. That makes sense, right? Yeah, so what I did when I came across this problem, and it just was sort of a thing that emerged, like, I didn't know that I was dealing with state. I was just building a Laravel app. And sure. I realized, like, oh, I need to be aware of the status of this thing because I'm checking this, like, Boolean field is public or something all the time. So I'm sure. doing this check, and I'm like, well, why don't I put this? So I guess the first step is you're doing this check everywhere. Then you abstract it into some method called, like, is public. Then you realize that there's defined states. And so I created an accessor on the model called status, and it would just return a string. And I appended that accessor to the JSON output so I could share it with Vue, so that Vue would just know, like, when it had a product or whatever, it would know if it's a draft or if it's a, right?
And I've done all would this,
react
yes.
accordingly. Yeah, you've done that, right? And there's so many challenges that come with that. So many little nuances.
Right.
Right? Like it's like, okay, now I want to change state. So I want to go from this to that. Anyway, all this does is sort of lay out, like, a framework and a set of rules for doing this. So, like, all the package would do is, there's so many different approaches to it. Let me back up one step and say it's all based off this computer science-y concept of finite state machine. Have you ever heard that word? Because I haven't.
No.
Okay.
Take me there.
Right. So there's Turing machines. I don't know any of this. This is all Logan's territory. Okay. He was trying to explain to me Turing machines and computation. It's like computational models. Okay. I don't know. But anyway, finite state machine is apparently a computational model that is not really used in computers anymore for whatever reason. But it's a concept that you can represent, like, how you define a finite state machine is a system that has a finite set of states and transitions between those states. So it sounds really simple, but
it's like the switch on my car's air conditioning that says 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Yes, it is the switch. Yeah, and then you would think of the transition. So, like, the one of the classic examples is, like, a stoplight or a turnstile. Like, let's say a turnstile. So there's two states in the turnstile. There's locked and then there's open, right? And there's events that can be initiated on the turnstile. There's coin and then there's push. And so based on the state, the events respond differently. And the events can transition the state, right?
Sure.
So like a coin event, if it's in the current state is locked, the state will turn to open. If the current state's open and you put a coin in, it'll just stay open. Nothing will happen, you know? So anyway,
and
bringing it back to
if you do a push on closed, it fails. And if you do a push on open, it gotcha.
Yeah. So and then there's this way of, like, modeling this in a graph, like, spreadsheet type, you know, X, Y axis thing where you say, or a table. I'm looking for the word table.
Yes.
Yeah. That is the word.
Yes.
I'm, like, visualizing it, trying to explain it. So a table where you have your states and then your transitions, whatever. Anyway, so the deal is, in the old way, what I actually did was that status accessor, and then in it I had this wicked if-else statement that was like, if this set of things return status, else if this set of things return, sorry, not status, return open or return draft or return something. And then I had all these willy-nilly methods that were like publish, unpublish, archive, and then they would change fields in my database, and then naturally the accessor would reflect that. So what you would do, I don't actually know what it would look like because I can't picture it perfectly with Eloquent, but you'd have something where you would define what qualifies this model for what state, you know? And then separately, you would define a transition as between two states. So you would define a list of transitions in an array or something that would say, like, the transition called publish would take the state from open or from draft to public, right?
Sure.
So then you could just, like, say transition publish, and then internally it would know how to, like, it knows what qualifies what for each state, and it knows what needs to happen to move things between states.
Sure. Okay, so then here's an issue, though. Can you have transitions that have multiple source states?
Yes.
So, for example, delete, right, could take it from any initial state to deleted.
It's actually, like, built into to most of those packages is multiple sources. Yep.
Great. All right, carry on.
Yeah, right. Good question. Nice. So that to me is just good enough. I'm like, oh, I'm sold in those instances because it just makes it nice. But the other cool thing here is I had to deal with this too. It's like business comes to you and says, oh, well, we want a log of the history of this product. You know, we want to know when it went public, when it went offline, when it was archived, things like that. And they wanted a little sidebar delayed, you know, displayed with view or something.
Sure.
So before, I don't know, that type of thing always just gave me the heebie-jeebies. But it's you just create like a state history table that just records the state
events, basically.
Yeah. Oh, and the cool thing with this model is you would have a new field on your model. So your your product model, you would have a field called last state. So it would know where it came from.
And that last state is a relationship to the state events table?
Yeah, I guess it would be. I think
that's very cool. I think that's how it should be.
I mean, we're dreaming here. So like, anything goes.
We're inventing things that have already been invented.
Exactly. That's what we do best. What I do best.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. String finish.
All right. Wait. Have you looked yet to see if Spotsy has a state machine?
Oh, I haven't. I don't think.
What
I'll
do you think
look.
The over under on that is?
Just
do
to keep the joke going.
You think 50-50? You think he does or doesn't have one?
I think it's probably like 20-80.
Okay.
So the reason I might have 20 one. Or 10 or 5, I've never heard of this thing before.
It's true.
And I don't know about you. I feel like that's kind of crazy. You know, I hope this isn't a Laracast because then it'll show how disconnected I am these
days. Okay,
but
listen, if it's a Laracast, I'll feel a little bad. If it's on Matt's blog, we're never going to hear the end of it.
Yeah, for sure. If it's in Matt's book, we'll be fired.
Yeah, I don't think it's in Matt's book. I'm pretty sure it's not in Matt's book.
It is not in Matt's book.
But what if he accidentally, what if he blogged about it?
I don't think he did. I feel like I would have heard about this thing. Like, all the Laravel ecosystem stuff, and even outside of the ecosystem, like, even, like, the state pattern. I love the state pattern. It sounds great to me, like, the actual design pattern thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like state pattern in use with relational databases. It's much more like robust and defined, and I've just never heard about it. So I don't know. I'm hoping that people listening to this will be like, that's pretty dope. Never heard about that. And I'm hoping this kind of, I don't know, helps people, because it totally would have helped me, like, huge. Like, this whole application is suffering because I didn't use this state machine thing. So
interesting. All right. Now let's try and poke a hole in it.
Okay.
Where is a place where you can shoot yourself in the foot by having used this?
Yeah. Well, here's a weird thing, and I don't know if this is a shoot yourself in the foot thing, but when you go to decide what state something's in, I still haven't resolved that. Like, it can only be in one state at one time, right? So, like, how do you decide what order states get qualified for, you know? Like, the algorithm you would write. So, like, before, like I told you, I had all these else ifs that was like, if is published is null, and if created at is less than current time, you know, all this stuff.
Right.
But that logic gets so crazy when you have like 6 or 7 states and you're doing all this checking on dates and timestamps and Booleans. It gets nuts. And I've ran into so many bugs because it's like it accidentally chose the wrong state because of the order I was checking to see what state something's in. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, it does. So I think I'm misunderstanding how your machine works then. What I was thinking is that your machine, basically each state would just be declared as like an associative array of key value pairs.
And the value I'm picturing the value being a callback that qualifies something in that state.
Sure. Okay, but like imagine this, right? Imagine if at the head of your state machine file, right, whatever class this is, right, you just declare a bunch of like key value pairs, so you say published is published at is after, or published at is not after now, right
yeah,
so that, because that would be like scheduled to be published,
right?
And archived at is null, and you know, whatever, all these other little fields that you need to check, right? And so you just set like an associative array of all of the things that you expect something to be in this state, right?
Yeah.
And then, I guess it doesn't exactly work because there's like greater than, less than things. But basically what I would expect is that to get the state of something, it would just check all of those fields. And if it qualified, it qualified.
Right, like and the first one it qualified for, it would return. Like, what if it qualifies for two, you know?
Explain how that could be possible.
Yeah, so let's say the, like, let's say archived and draft, okay? So draft checks that the published at is null, and archive checks that archived is archived at is filled in, right?
Right. Well, then you just haven't completely defined your states. Then.
Right, exactly. Because so, right, draft, in the perfect world, every state is completely independent. I feel like that's easier said than done. I feel like I ran into things that were more complex than that. But even so, like every the logic inside those states is so redundant because you have to check, you know, like if something happens before, if one check happens before the other check, you have to make sure you check to make sure archived is null when you check your published at date, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I just ran into so many things like that, that it kept giving me false states because I would just screw up the, you know, I would do one check in one thing and forget that I have to add an inverse check in all the other states, you know?
Right. So, okay. So I think theoretically, like, I know that this isn't exactly what it is, but I think theoretically you should have like a state interface that basically has like a list of all of the required arguments for a state, and you just need to check all of them.
Right. Good point. Yeah. Something like that.
You see what
right?
I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, some
we're
sort
basically
of, yeah.
like, because the only reason you have that problem is that you didn't check whether archived at was null in draft.
Right.
Right.
If it would just be hard to turn something at. Like that into an interface if it. Like
it,
the beauty
I mean, it
of the
be
callback
interface
thing.
Interface. Like, it wouldn't be an actual interface.
Right,
but
I know what you're saying.
It would
saying.
Serve the same purpose.
In some sort of contract, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the spirit of it. I think for sure that would be the key. But I don't know. I feel like there's smart ways to handle this, and I can't think of them right now. But are there any other holes that can be poked here? Or like, how do you feel about this approach? Are you thinking this is, like, overkill? Or
I have a little bit of an issue with... say I add a field down the road that's going to affect states and I do it in like a migration.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, are all my states going to get screwed up?
Not unless, I mean, yeah, if it affects states. Yeah, sure.
Well, like say it's a thing that affects states, right?
Yep. Right.
Like say I now added the concept of, okay, like say you couldn't have like private posts before, like, okay. You know how like on YouTube you can publish for just me.
Sure.
Say we add like a just me published concept, right? And so it's just like a Boolean field, right? But now we need to check that Boolean field on like all of our published states.
Right. I'm trying not to get caught up in the use case, but the private thing I would think of as like a separate scope, you know? It wouldn't be, but you know what I'm saying? Like you would set something to private or not. But you might want to track the state of it being turned private.
Sure.
And that just might be a separate thing, but...
Yeah, made private, made public, draft, undraft, you know.
Right.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it could be. No, you're right. It could be a thing.
Right, well,
like,
forget about why you would want to do it. But imagine that you did want to do it. You wanted to add that later, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so now all of your state checking logic has to check for that.
Right. Yep.
So you run the migration and you update all the tables and you basically like default it to false everywhere. Right. And you update all of the logic and it's checking for it all and it's all false.
Right.
But like, is it going to like re-trigger state checking on everything now that you've run a migration? Because like, what if one of them changed?
What do you mean?
See what I'm saying?
Well, I'm thinking of state checking as something that happens at runtime.
Okay.
You know,
but then
like
you're not creating those
value.
State event rows in your table, right?
Say that again, the state event.
Because so you have this whole table full of like state changes, basically.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So say that me adding a column triggered a state change.
Oh,
right?
Like it. Okay. Right.
You see
like
what I'm saying?
The qualifiers change, and then what happens to the history?
Me adding a column like changes just
like,
enough
like
of the logic.
What goes
that,
into?
Like, you there?
Yeah. Are you there?
Sorry. Yeah. Internet weirdness.
Okay.
But yeah, so say that adding a column changes just enough of the qualifications for a couple of things that the state isn't what it was before that migration was run.
Yeah, I think that would just be on you, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to like re-trigger a state check.
Yeah, that's a good thing though. Yeah,
that was just like the only that's the kind of bug that I would have happen in staging somewhere and then get yelled at.
I mean, at the end of the day, like all this stuff, like it seems to me that the problems that we would find out about this state thing are the same problems we would encounter if we try to do it on our own. You know,
right,
like it's
totally
something that people have to try to do. I think, like it's just a natural thing that people do because I just did it naturally, like. I just hacked my way through this thing that looks like the state thing, but just is not professional. You know, it doesn't have like clear constraints. It's not, you know, I don't know. So anyway, yeah, I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. I was really pumped about it when I first saw it. I can't wait to use it in a project. So I got my eye out, like waiting for stuff. I don't want to use it on something really simple. Like a user is like, I don't know, archived and not archived, you know, something that is more specific.
Okay, real quick before we wrap this up, can you have multiple states per thing? Like named states?
Multiple
state machines per model.
Yeah, I'm sure you could.
Because like,
a part of me wants to keep it super integrated. But I know what you're saying. Like,
But like publication state is one state, but then what if like say it's like a social media app or something, right? And it's like promoted, not promoted, you know, or like whatever.
Yep. Yeah, totally.
Huh.
Yeah, definitely.
Who knew?
You could do that and just separate them out. I mean, yeah, so part of me wants to make this super integrated into Eloquent. Another part of me wants to make it just like PHP stuff that you just return like a state object. Like you just create like a post state object, which is probably the route I'll go, but I don't know. Yeah. So I'm excited. I can't wait to have a real use case, and then I'm going to build something out, and I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm excited about it.
Sick.
Sweet. Oh, one real quick. I saw somebody do this. Instead of like having all these controllers, you would say like post publish controller, or publish post controller, however you would do it, right? Like publish unpublish archive, blah, blah, blah. You would just have a post transitions controller, and you would just post like what transition you want it to go to. And then it would apply all the stuff it needs to apply because it's defined in the transition. So I don't know. It seems
that's
a little general to me, but
no, I get it though.
But I don't know. So like, yeah, you're just saying like transition this post. What do you want to transition it to this state? Oh, I know how to do that. You've already defined what needs to happen.
That is interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
Huh.
Yeah. So
or I think I would call it post state controller. But yeah, anyway.
Controller. Yeah. No, definitely. It's good.
Cool.
All right. Anything else?
I think I'm good. There was a lot of like dog scratching herself in this episode, and I did my best to like mute around it. So I'm sorry to the listeners.
I had a Slack response in some of this, so there was a little bit of clicking. Yeah. Shoot. We ruined it.
Well, I guess that's the end of this podcast.
Should we re-record?
No.
No, I joke.
No.
All right. So this is another 40-minuter, actually.
Yeah, I think I might chop a couple minutes off the beginning. We'll see.
I thought that was fun, though.
Yeah.
Your call.
Good podcast.
Cool. All right.
All right.
Peace. Sweet.
Peace. And a big shout-out to Jared White for providing this music.